Hello and welcome to the Money Nerds Podcast, where owning a calculator, budgeting your money, and having a net worth is actually cool. I'm your host, Whitney Hansen, and each week I'll be chatting with inspiring people to learn their secrets to financial success. Now let's dive into the show. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode. I am so stoked that you're here. How's your week been? What have you been doing? Have you been working? Maybe you've had some time off. Hopefully you've had some time off. Weekends go way too fast. I don't care if you have a 9-to-5 or if you're self-employed. They always go way too freaking fast. And this weekend we had a ton of snow. So we got a little snowstorm and I really can't complain. Boise's had great weather, but still, whenever we get snow, I'm not exactly the happiest person about that. But today we're not going to be talking about snow. We're going to be talking about FIRE. Financial independent and retiring early. You guys have heard me talk about this a little bit on the podcast, and you may even listen to other shows that specifically focus on FIRE. So I'm really excited to share this episode with you. But before we dive into FIRE and what that could mean for your own life, even if you have kids or don't have kids, doesn't matter either way, I have to share one of my favorite segments, which is our hashtag Money Wins. This money win comes from Carol. Carol says, not quite a money win, but similar to a non-scale victory in weight loss. It all started with me emptying the dishwasher and deciding to clean the Rubbermaid silverware holder. Then a few hours later, I ended up with 3 garbage bags full of clothes, kitchen gadgets, and household items for donations. Hashtag money win. Carol, sounds like you were like Marie Kondoing your house. I too completely understand the financial implications there. We think it's not necessarily a money win, but it kind of is, because I think once you get through this like decluttering phase and you have everything around your house just like lined up, and you see, I've actually trained my brain to not see items but see dollar signs. This is so weird, I know, but I do. Every time I look around my house, I'm like, okay, this cost me probably about $5. And when I start to like get rid of stuff or throw it away or donate it, I'm not joking, I get so frustrated because I see exactly how much money we have wasted on just stuff around the house. So I'm super proud of you, Carol, for decluttering your home and getting rid of all of that stuff. I think that's incredible, and I guarantee you that will equate to some money wins because it'll make you a lot more intentional with how you choose to spend your money. Speaking of intentionality, that's one of the things that we're talking about today in this episode with Bob Lai. Bob is from Vancouver, Canada, and he's the creator of TaCan, which is a personal finance blog, and it chronicles his quest for a joyful life and financial independence. His financial independent journey actually started in 2011 after a financial epiphany. And since then, he has amassed a dividend portfolio that pays over, get this, $1,500 per month. Not bad, my friend. That's pretty dang good. Bob's mission is to show that financial independence is possible as a single income family with 2 kids. His focus includes dividends and ETF investing, which I'm a big fan of myself, financial independence, early retirement, happiness, frugality, and finding the right personal balance between saving for the future and enjoying life today. In this episode, we get a chance to talk a little bit about FIRE, what that means for him. We talk about not letting work define who we are. This was such a fun conversation. We talk a lot about investing in equities and in ETFs. And if those terminologies kind of scare you or you're just not quite sure what they mean, then we're going to break it down and let you know exactly what it means so it's not quite so confusing or overwhelming. We talk about money and relationships and even how to handle debt in a healthy way. I think you guys are going to really enjoy this episode. I am so excited to introduce you to Bob Lai from TaCan.com. What's up, guys? Today we are going to talk a little bit more about FIRE and what this means for your life, and more importantly, how you can take some of the lessons that we chat about in today's episode to apply directly to your own personal life. So there's a lot of different concepts out there, and I've brought on an expert, Bob Lai from TaCan.com, to come and chat with us a little bit about FIRE. Bob, thanks so much for hanging out.
Thanks for having me, Whitney.
I am stoked to chat with you. So let's start super basic, okay? So let's assume somebody's never heard of FIRE before. So what is FIRE? What does it stand for? And what does it mean to you?
Sure. So FIRE stands for financial independence, retire early. Yeah, I always mix up the R and E sometimes.
Me too.
So essentially is essentially means that you have enough asset that provides some sort of passive income to a point where your passive income exceeds your expenses, right? So then you're financially independent. And when that happens, you could choose to either retire early, or you could continue to work or do what you want. So that's kind of the basic concept. So for me, I'm more focusing on the financial independence aspect. Whether I retire early or not, that's not really something I'm considering, or maybe I would. But when I think there's been a lot of talks about FIRE in general, especially in the mainstream media. And what happens is they all seem to focus on the retire early aspect rather than the financial independence. And it gives a very bad vibe of the FIRE community, because people are like, oh, this guy retired at 30, this lady retired at 40, and so on and so on. And, you know, when you think of retire, people usually think, you know, you're sitting on the beach, sipping pina colada, relaxing. But that's not really the case. And also, if you look at within the FIRE community, a lot of these FIRE bloggers that have reached early retirement, they're still working in some aspect. I mean, a good example is Mr. Money Mustache Pete. I never met him in person, but he was a computer or some sort of high-tech engineer from Canada as well. And then he retired, but he still works as a carpenter because he loves doing carpentry, right? So a lot of people on the internet thinks, well, he's not really retired, he's still working. But it's not about working, right? It's about you're doing something you enjoy. So you now have, when you become financially independent, you have the choice of, do I want to continue doing my 9-to-5 job, or can I change my career and do something I love, regardless whether I get paid or not, right? So that's the power of being financially independent. And that's the idea behind the FIRE movement. And for me, again, I focus on the financially independent aspect. And I think for me is I have other interests. Like I blog, I make some money through my blog. I'm doing photography on the side. My wife and I have a cookbook business kind of thing on the side.
That's amazing.
And she has a bunch of stuff, right? So for us, we really enjoy doing that. But again, I have a full-time job working in the high-tech field. So, and I do enjoy working in that field as well. I love what I do today. But, you know, is having that flexibility to say one day, okay, you know, I don't want to do my job anymore, but I want to focus on photography. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I want to write more books, whether they sell or not, it doesn't really matter to me. It's having that flexibility. And I think people need to realize that's the important aspect. Because, I mean, some people may be financially independent. They might decide to continue to work, right? For example, I'm kind of going on and on, but like,
no, this is good stuff.
My dad retired when he was in his early 40s. So I grew up having an early retiree in the family. One of my cousins, he retired when he was, I think, 42, 41 or something, retired from high tech. So I knew, like, it kind of runs in the family.
Crazy.
But I also have another cousin that reached financial independence, but she decided to continue working. She was a doctor and she loved what she does. So, you know, I've been sort of learning from all three of these family members and sort of adapt and learn what FIRE really means.
Yeah.
And it's really cool to see that, right? Especially my second cousin who is still working because she really loves what she does. And that gives me a complete different perspective, because I think a lot of people are jumping into this FIRE movement because they, you know, I'm being a bit more general here, like they don't like their job or they want to do something else. But it's not really this, in my opinion, it's not really the end solution. It doesn't mean all of a sudden when you reach FIRE, you're going to be happy, right? I think you need to be happy along the way and work toward being happy and being content with yourself.
Yep.
And it's not a finish line, let's put it that way, right?
Sorry to interrupt you just for a second, but I just have to say, as we talk about financial independence, it can feel a little bit confusing. So if you want to know exactly how to get started, the best place is through creating a budget. Budgets are like the least sexy thing, but they're so important. So if you need help creating a budget, go to whitneyhanson.com/how-to-budget, and that will help you on your journey to financial independence. Okay, back to the show.
I want to dig into this because I fully agree with you, my friend, and I think a lot of people, they hear that and they want to be content and quote unquote happy in their life, that nobody wants to be. I don't think people want to be miserable. Let's hope not. If they're listening to this podcast, definitely not. But one of the things that it's so hard to, I almost like separate yourself and get out of that whole grind of I'm just working to pay the bills. I'm not really seeing any results. How do you personally, I mean, you enjoy your job, but how do you personally remove yourself from this situation so you can see bigger picture and live a more mindful life? Do you have any tips that you personally practice?
Good question.
Are you like one of those crazy journalers?
No, I think just finding what you like. And I mean, I actually just published a post yesterday about some of my personal struggles lately, and it was really hard. It was like one of the most personal posts I've written. And I got my wife to sort of proofread it before I published, and she was like, well, you know, like your family and friends are reading this. Are you okay publishing it? And I was like, well, I think so. So anyways, but I think a lot of that has to do with just, you know, being able to talk to my wife on a daily basis and understand that, you know, it's not going to be joyful all the time or happy all the time. There's going to be up and downs, right? Ebbs and flows. And it's just being able to get out of that stage and finding the positive side of things. The other thing is, yeah, if you hate your job, it's, you shouldn't let the work define who you are. And, you know, I mean, the thing, I've written a post about this where, you know, you go to a party and a stranger comes up. Usually the first thing is, you know, hey, what's your name? What do you do? Right. But like, why are we letting work define who you are? Shouldn't it be like what you like and what your hobbies are and, you know, more personal stuff rather than, oh, you're an engineer, therefore you're a nerd, or you're an artist and therefore you're creative. Like, we put these labels on people because what they do for work, but that shouldn't happen, right? So I think it's really remove yourself from that label and finding things that you truly enjoy in life, whether it's, you know, read or, you know, writing or, you know, play games or watch videos or something that you feel you can fulfill your life with, and focus on those. And then just understanding that your job, your work, is just a small part of your world. Don't let that dictate how you feel and how that rules your day and how that runs your day. You're bigger than your work, kind of thing.
That is such a killer knowledge bomb, Bob. I love that. I think everything you said is spot on. And I hope that, I mean, if you're listening to this, push pause, rewind, listen to that again, because what he's saying is so critical. It's take that time to explore and to not let a label define you. So you're way more than your 9-to-5. I hope so. I hope you're more than your 9-to-5, right? But it's giving yourself permission to go play around and to try new things. And when you have financial independence, that just allows you to fail bigger, because there's no pressure. If it doesn't make money, who cares? It's not that financial pressure. So I think it's really interesting. And I want to dive a little bit more into how you personally are structuring your overall portfolio for financial independence. Like, what are you investing in? What kinds of things?
So we invest mostly in equities. So, I mean, you know, when people think about what to invest, people typically think about real estate.
Yep.
or stocks, right? So we mostly focus on stocks. You see everybody nowadays talk about index ETFs, and, you know, buy index and just leave it, track the market. We kind of take a different approach. So for our portfolio, we sort of invest in dividend paying stocks. So like blue chip companies that pay dividend each quarter or each month. And the reason why is, it's kind of a silly mistake, to be honest, is that when I started investing when I was in university, I just bought an individual stock that happened to pay dividend. And that was before the financial crisis. And when the financial crisis hit, the value of the stock went down quite a bit, but it was still paying dividend. And when I calculated, it was paying around 3 to 3.5%. And that was better than putting it in GIC, right? So, which is our Canadian term of term deposit. So I was like, well, I should just leave it because I didn't need any money, right? So I figured, well, I'd leave it and just continue collecting dividend. Maybe one day the stock price will recover. And since then, the stock price has recovered more than doubled, kind of thing. I've been collecting dividend. And with that example, I kind of sort of hung on to that and just thought, oh, maybe I would invest in dividend paying stocks that you know, I use, like dividend paying companies that I use on an everyday basis, right? So I'm just thinking examples, like I use an app, a Mac computer, so I have some Apple stocks, for example. We use Procter & Gamble products, so, Procter & Gamble. I wear contacts, so I buy Johnson & Johnson. We use banks, Canadian banks. I bank with TD, so I own TD. And that kind of just how I rationalize the reason for buying dividend stocks and hold them. For me, it's sort of a long-term holding. Because I've always been interested in stock analysis and I took some courses, I sort of have a knack for analyzing stocks.
That makes sense. I wonder. Yeah.
But at the same time, I realized that, you know, there are benefits of picking, just stick with index ETFs because you don't have to spend a lot of time analyzing and, you know, making sure everything is okay and so on and so on. So what I do is I do a hybrid approach. So I kind of interchange because I mostly do the analysis and buying, but my wife is
involved too. You take care of this, my friend. Yeah. This is out.
so we buy both index ETFs and dividend paying stocks, and sort of get the best of both worlds. So with index ETFs, we get diversification and track the market, whereas, you know, individual dividend stocks, I get to sort of be more creative, do some analysis and so on and so on. So that's my approach.
That's super cool. So, okay, let's like, if somebody's listening and they're like, what the hell is an ETF? Let's break that down just a little bit. So I have a pretty good understanding of it, but it sounds like you are probably a rock star at this stuff because it sounds like you kind of geek out on it. So an exchange traded fund, give us like the quick 30,000 foot view of what is an ETF. How is it different than like an individual stock?
Right. So the idea of ETF is they would hold a large number of stocks in each ETF. So they're usually it's started by Vanguard. So index ETF is where you track the market. So like your S&P 500. So they would just buy every company in the S&P 500 index, and then they would just track the performance of those companies, right? So that's one. And then, you know, you could also have your world index where you track, they buy, at least they try to buy all the stocks in the market, available in the market, right? So there's like the total stock market index fund and so on and so on. So that's the idea. But then nowadays with ETFs being so popular, there's also specialized ETFs where they do, you know, for example, only energy ETFs or only banks or only technology. So it's quite broad. And the reason why ETFs are so popular nowadays compared to mutual funds, for example, is that ETFs usually have way lower MER compared to mutual funds. So for example, mutual funds, you might be paying, you know, 2%, 3% MER, meaning if your mutual fund returns, say, 10%, and your MER is 3%, you're actually only getting 7% return. So you're getting 3%, you're paying 3% to the company, right? And that's whether you make money or not. So if you're losing, if the mutual fund is losing 10%,
you're actually
you're losing 13% because you're adding the additional 3%. The benefit of ETFs is that usually the MERs are a lot lower, so usually around less than 1%. So, you know, anywhere from 1 to as low as like 0.02% and so on. So your management fee is so low, and the idea is these ETFs are passive, so there's not too much turnover. They're not actively trading stocks in and out. They're tracking the index. So, you know, the S&P 500, they're buying all the different stocks listed in the S&P 500. And unless something get out of the index, they don't touch them. So there's way less turnover, therefore less fee.
That's so critical too, because just like your returns compound, guys, as everything gets reinvested, your dividends get reinvested, and it starts to grow and compound, your fees do too. And if you're not watching that stuff, it can really bite you in the butt later. So I'm glad you mentioned the fees. It sounds like Vanguard, is that where you're doing most of your investing, or do you use other platforms?
Yeah, I do. Well, Vanguard is an institute, and you could trade with them, and they also have ETFs that you could buy on the stock market. But yeah, there's like Vanguard, there's iShares, mm-hmm. Horizon. There's a lot of different ETF companies out there now, and I mean the choices, there's so many. You probably get pretty confused if you just start doing research. So usually you just want to, you know, stick with like a handful, like 3 to 5 index funds and go with those.
Yeah, I like it. And it sounds like you are hand selecting which ones you want to participate in. And do you have an Excel spreadsheet and you just track all of the different investments that you're currently invested in and then make decisions based off of, I don't have any in energy, so maybe I'm going to pursue that. Or my global market's looking a little weak, so I'm going to put more money into that. Is that kind of how your strategy is?
A little bit. So with index funds, we only hold 2. So we hold a Canadian all-cap index fund, and then we own an ex-Canada all-world index fund. So those give me, you know, geographical diversification within Canada and outside of Canada. And then in terms of individual dividend stocks, there's this thing within the dividend investing community called dividend aristocrats or dividend all stars. So it depends on how many years these companies have been raising the dividend for, right? So if a company that raises, I think to be an aristocrat, you have to be 30 or 40 years of every year you have to raise the dividend payout. So that's a pretty good track record, right? So typically these are really big companies that have been paying dividends for a long time. So there are spreadsheets out there that you could get, and then you could sort of do some analysis and pick out certain stocks, right? So that's one way for me to do it. The other way, like I was mentioning, just figure out what we use on an everyday basis and stick with those, right? Like if I'm using those on a daily basis, chances are other people will be using that, right? Like, totally, for example, we all use cell phones, right? We're kind of addicted to data plans, where most of us are.
Guilty.
Right? So, you know, telecommunication companies are good to own, like the AT&T and Verizon, for example, right? So, you know, we use natural gas and oil all the time. So, you know, natural gas or oil companies might be good to own. So like, that's kind of my logic. And once I sort of figure out some of the companies that I use on a daily basis, then I do some more research. The other way I looked at it is I look at the index funds, and I look at their top 10 holdings, and I see which ones pay dividends. And then with that, I take those, I say 10, top 10, maybe 5 of them pay dividends. So then I do more research on the 5.
That's kind of smart. I love that. I think it's really cool. And I like that you've got a pretty good approach going on. So last time I checked, it sounds like your dividend portfolio, just the dividends on a monthly basis, is bringing in like $1,500. That's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah. We $1,500 on average. I think this year we're hoping to make $18,000 in 2018. I think we're pretty good in crossing that line, so that's pretty decent, because essentially it's all passive income, right? I'm not doing anything.
That's amazing.
It's just the company just pay me for own any stocks. So.
And you're reinvesting the dividends back into the different stocks?
Yeah, so we do a DRIP, so that's a dividend reinvesting plan when we can, or we collect the dividends, and once we have a sizable chunk of money, we then either buy additional shares or buy other companies.
Got it. Okay. So give us some context here. So it sounds like you're investing a lot. You're being very diligent with your personal finances. So what are some of the sacrifices that you and your family make on a daily basis so that you can invest more towards your future?
Well, I wouldn't call it sacrifice. I think one of the misconceptions of within the FIRE community is that, oh, these people are sacrificing, therefore they could save a lot of money. And you see it, right? Like there's like the extreme case where they're saving every penny, and you know, they're eating ramen noodles, and you know, never turn on heat in their house, and so on and so on. I mean, you could find examples like that. But for me, and believe me, I was there. I was there before, and that caused quite a bit of friction with my wife.
I bet.
Because I'm like, you know, why are you spending money on coffee, or why are you going to the cafe, or you know? And over time, we got into a lot of arguments, and I realized that that's just not a healthy relationship. And the other thing is, she started feeling guilty for spending money, and I didn't want her to feel like that. And so for me nowadays, it's my focus. And if you read my blog, you'll find out is that my key message is finding that right personal balance between saving for the future and spending money now so you can enjoy your present moment, mm-hmm. right? Because you want to find, like, my balance might be different than yours, right? So we've been able to find that balance where we're still enjoying some of the finer things in life, like, you know, my wife's from Denmark, so you probably heard the word hygge. So it's about like cozy, like that's the loose translation. So they like to like, you know, go out and have a nice cup of coffee, sit down and talk, or, you know, have a piece of chocolate end of the night kind of thing.
I need this.
So, or sit by the fire and just drink tea, or just talk, right? So it's very like a very cozy feeling. And we go out to cafes, you know, like the family, like, you know, not every weekend, but sometimes maybe once a month we go and have a cup of coffee, have some bakery, and just sit together as a family and just enjoy our time, right? And for me, like, it might be like $10-$15, but that's so invaluable. I mean, some people might think, oh, you're spending $15 on this, like you could save it and invest it. But like for me, it's like, okay, yeah, I can invest it, but I'm not enjoying my life right now, right? Mm-hmm. And I might get into more argument with my wife and my kids and so on and so on. So why not enjoy more? And the other thing is like, okay, so what? You save all that money, but how do you know you will be there to use it, right? Like,
right.
You know, I just saw yesterday Paul Allen died at, I think, age 65. Like, he's like, aww, multi-billionaire, like one of the richest guys in the world. I was shocked because 65 is not that old, right? You look at Steve Jobs, he passed away pretty young too, in relatively turn, right? So even though these people are like billionaires, they have all the money in the world, like they didn't have the time to enjoy it, right? So, well, they probably enjoyed it, but like if they lived longer, they could have enjoyed more, right? So even though you're saving for that FIRE stage, like you really need to cherish what you have today, right at this moment. So definitely like scale back a little bit, find that personal balance, and just enjoy the present moment more, right? So you don't like look back and like, oh, I wish I did this, I wish I did that. Like, you know, I could give quite a number of examples where, you know, a few years ago, I'd be like, no, we don't want to do this because we don't want to spend money on the invest for now. But then now I look back, I'm like, well, we should have spent money on that because, you know, that was our only opportunity. I kind of regretted that, right?
I know. So I like that you're talking about this because I think that's really, really critical. And it sounds like being able to enjoy the daily joys and not feel that guilt of investing more money or going to buy the coffee, the $5 latte, it's okay if you do this on occasion, guys. Like, it's not going to kill your entire financial life. But it sounds like a lot of times that's coming from a very healthy place. And what I see a lot in the FIRE community is sometimes people are approaching it from a very negative place. Like, I've got to hit this number exactly as you mentioned, because I want to quit my job. So therefore, everything that I'm doing today is all going towards my FIRE goal. But that's it's almost like that living that deferred life plan. The life will be better when I hit this goal.
Delayed gratification.
And I like that you found some balance there. So give us a little bit more context. You mentioned your wife. I know you've got two kids. So how long have you been married and how old are your kids now?
My oldest is almost 5. He's turning 5 later this month. My youngest is 2.5. And we've been married for 7 years.
Sweet. Yeah. And your wife, Denmark, do you guys go there often?
Yeah, we met. It's kind of funny. I guess this makes us quite unique because I'm originally from Taiwan. Hence my name, Taocan, stands for Taiwanese Canadian. It's a word I made up. but I met my wife when she was on exchange in Vancouver. We lived in Vancouver, Canada. So we met, and then, you know, she never went back, or she decided to stay with me. And yeah, we go back to Denmark. We're trying every year and a half. With now the kids are over 2, it's getting a little bit more expensive.
Yeah.
We were just over there this past summer. We usually go over there for a month. And luckily with my work, I've been able to work remotely for about 2 weeks.
Oh, cool.
Each time we go. So that has been worked out really well. So the idea is just go there, spend time with her side of family and her friends, and, you know, get the kids to understand what Danish culture is like. And I mean, my parents are here. My family are here in Canada, so they're learning about my culture. But hopefully we're planning to go back to Taiwan one of these days and sort of show them what Taiwan is about as well. Yeah.
That's amazing. I like that too. So my fiance, he's from Vietnam. So his parents immigrated to the States and moved there. And it's just such a cool opportunity to learn about different cultures. So I think that's, as a kid, how cool. Like, what an awesome opportunity to be able to learn about two very different cultures.
Yeah, and we're actually teaching my kids, our kids, all the different languages. So they're more or less fluent in Danish, and then they know, they speak English, obviously, and then they can understand Mandarin. They're starting to say more Mandarin words, but they sing Mandarin songs, and they could understand just fine. So it's pretty cool, like to see them like switching the languages and just like it's pretty cool.
That's wild, and how lucky for them to be able to speak multiple languages. I think that's so cool. So one of the things too that I'm curious about from a personal level, before you had kids, so your oldest is about 5 years old, so you were married for 2 years before you had your first little one, and you were living this very almost aggressively frugal until you found your balanced lifestyle. How did kids change this whole concept of FIRE for you? Did it make you want to focus on it more? Did it make you find more balance? How did it change things?
I think a bit of both. They definitely made me want to have that balance of being able to enjoy time with them and spend time with them. But at the same time, it also makes me want to get to FIRE earlier so I could have more flexibility. Like with my work, like I said, I can't just take a last minute vacation, for example, right? Like, everything needs to be planned out because this is high tech. And it's really hard to take, like, you know, a month off, for example, right? So in that aspect, because we love to travel, and one of the goals we want to do is to travel the world and explore the different cultures and see all the different countries. So from that aspect, it kind of drives me wanting to achieve FIRE faster, but at the same time, wanting to find the balance and, you know, want to spend more time with them and also teach them that, you know, it's important to work, like, you know, where money comes from and like, why is it important? Why does daddy go to work every day, and what does he do at work? And, you know, like, where does money come from, and why is it important to, you know, turn off the light, don't let the water run forever, kind of thing. Like, like things like that, right? So I feel like it's my, as a parent, it's my responsibility to teach them that. And with that, it's, you know, fire is a big part of it, but through work and, you know, everyday life dealing with money, that's something we do as well.
I love it. So for you personally, when you were growing up, what kinds of things did your parents teach you about money?
We were pretty open with money growing up. Like, we never had an allowance. There was always money. Like, my parents usually left some bills in a drawer with and some coins, and yeah. You know, my brother and I could just take that money if we need to, and then we usually would tell my parents that, oh, we use that money because, right? So we were very open with money discussion, and they taught us money from a young age, and we both had our bank accounts. So I learned compound interest from a very young age, and I was like checking my balance book. It's like, oh, I got like a dollar more,
right?
From interest, because back then interest rate was higher, so you earn more,
way
right?
Higher.
So that was pretty cool. And even when we started school and, you know, getting credit card, my dad taught me that always pay your balance in full. You know, one of the things he taught me was, you know, treat your credit card like your debit card. So spend it only if you have the money.
Yeah.
So like if you're spending $100 on your credit card, make sure you have $100 on your in your bank, and don't always pay off your balance in full. So that's something I learned. And even with work, and, you know, like, we're very open with discussing salary. Like, you know, my brother and I, we talk about our salary level and, you know, what we should do and so on. And that, with that, I think it's very helpful in terms of just being open with the whole money, because it's such a taboo subject.
Yeah.
And being able to open, even with my cousins and stuff, we're pretty open with money discussion and, you know, getting advice and giving advice. It's been extremely helpful.
That's awesome. I really do appreciate that transparency. I think that's something that a lot of us were missing in our youth. So I think it's cool to see, you know, if you have that very strong foundation and your parents are open to talking about money and they're sharing and they're teaching you about compound interest when you're probably 5 years old, if they're teaching you all this kind of stuff, this is what can happen later in your life. You can actually have a very high functioning, very intelligent person that's trying to hit retirement before the age of 40. Like, this is incredible stuff. And so I know for me, hats off to your parents. They clearly did a very good job with their parenting job. So congrats to them.
Thanks.
So one of the things that I want to dive into a little bit more is let's speak to the person that is listening to this that's maybe struggling with debt, and this whole concept of financial independence is like, sure, would be nice, but I can barely pay my bills. So yep. For that specific person, do you have any suggestions or advice for them?
For sure. I mean, just don't see debt as the biggest problem of your life.
Yes.
Like, it's just a number. Like, to be honest, it's just your net worth, right? You might be in a negative territory. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't be ashamed that you have debt. Like, you know, it's called personal finance for a reason. It's personal. Just because you're in $10,000 in debt doesn't make you a bad person compared to somebody that's at your, like, one of your friends who is 20,000 in the positive territory. It doesn't make you a bad person. It just means you're in a different financial situation, financial spot compared to someone else you know, right? And again, it's personal. You know, you might rack up the debt because you went to school, or, you know, you didn't pay off your credit card, you didn't know about the credit card interest rate, and so on and so on. I mean, so many people get into that, right? And it's just realizing that it's okay. That's the first step. And I think the second step is, you know, break down the debt, figure out a plan to tackle the debt, to get you into the positive territory, right? Because I think once you develop some positive actions and plans and execute these plans, you're going to find you're going to start accelerating your debt repayment, and then you're going to get into deposit territory really quickly. And if you keep up those actions and plans, you're going to find your net worth will start to grow very quickly. So, I mean, it's no different than somebody trying to, for me, I don't see it any different than from somebody trying to grow their net worth so one day they could be fired. It's no different. It's whether you start at a negative 10,000 or zero or 20,000 or 500,000, it's all the same concept, right? It's you know, spend less than you earn, you know, save as much as you can, finding the right personal balance first, and then save the money, invest in, you know, appreciating asset, and allow these assets to make income for you. So one day the passive income will be greater or equal to your expenses. It's pretty simple, right?
That is killer advice. I love that. I like that you went into the detail of what you would do at each step. So I appreciate that. Bob, are you down for some rapid fire questions?
Sure. We'll see how I do.
I know. I haven't prepped you for these. These are all fun ones, so don't worry. Okay. So for the first question is, what is one purchase that you have recently made that has made your life better?
I shouldn't think too much about this, right? One purchase. I don't really spend that much, buy that much stuff anymore. What's the last thing I bought? I guess some on the, cauliflower. We made some cauliflower rice today, and that was delicious.
That is so good. I might have to bug you for the recipe later.
So it makes my life better by eating more healthy.
Oh, I dig it. This is amazing. Okay, what's one location that you're dying to travel to?
I've been to a lot of countries, but I would love to go to India one of these days to see what it's like.
Sweet. I love it. And then in your opinion, what is the secret to financial success?
Finding what's important in your life and work towards that, right? And just knowing the end goal and what you want to achieve, and you'll figure out the rest.
Yeah.
Step at a time.
I love it. Bob, this was so much fun. I love chatting with you. For everybody listening in, it sounds like Tawcan, TAWCAN.com is where they can go to read your work. You've got some great blog posts up there, so thank you for sharing that with the world. Is there anywhere else you'd like to send people where they can come hang out with you online?
Yeah, so my blog is a good place, TAWCAN.com, and I'm pretty active on Twitter, so follow me on Twitter, is at Tawcan as well. Or send me an email. I'm pretty good with responding to emails.
Oh, God bless you. I'm not. This is awesome though. I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much for hanging out and taking the time to share all of your wisdom with us.
No problem. Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Okay, so what'd you think? I love this episode with Bob. I think it was so great to just hear that refreshing view of what financial independence can be and how it's not necessarily the pursuit of stuff or the pursuit of happiness, but joyful living. And I think there's a big differentiator there. So I thought that was really cool and I appreciated his insights there. Guys, if you have enjoyed this episode, do me the biggest favor in the world. As you can imagine, podcasts are, shall I say, a pain in the badonk to produce. They're a lot of work. They really are. So my form of validation for this podcast is seeing your responses, your comments, your reviews, your 5-star ratings. All of that stuff really helps me see what is resonating for you and help create content in a way that is most meaningful to you and your life. So if you can just take like 2 seconds and leave me a 5-star review and then leave a review. Let me know, what did you like about this episode or this podcast in general? And of course, always share this on social media. That's where I hang out and I love seeing which episodes you guys are listening to. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will see you next week for another episode of the Money Nerds Podcast. Bye.